Welcome to the Talking Information Center's Tales of Mystery program. My name is Danny V. Today reading the Tales of Mystery, The Tangled Web They Weave, by the author Mark Thielman. And now for the story. 2 days could feel like forever. Olivier Laurent pursed his lips and pursued the silent prayer. It seemed unchristian and ill-mannered to jest about eternity while standing over Andre von Weick's body, this dead body. Still, with 2 days remaining before Oliver's required year of service as a parish constable expired, the next 2 sunsets seemed very far away. The body compounded his difficulties as he counted the jar of minutes before the end of his term. He knelt and studied the man. Van Eyck did not appear to be at peace. Did Norwich strangers ascend to heaven? He wondered. He knew the man to be a Protestant. Queen Elizabeth had allowed these Flemish arrivals to come to Norwich because their own country favored the papist religion. Laurent, however, knew little of the details of their customs or their faith. Did they have extra requirements to obtain the keys to heaven? Perhaps he would study the matter when he joyously returned to Oxford, free in 2 days. First, however, he must apprehend the killer, and do so quickly. The thought of delay made his stomach clench. He swallowed the discomfort, and he inspected the dead body. He remembered his lessons. What would Aristotle do? The Greek sage would look and think. So Oliver looked. Van Eyck's lay upon his back, his eyes open, facing the workshop's ceiling. A short man, Oliver judged the man to have been frail in life. From his limited experience, however, everyone in death looked weaker and more vulnerable. With life's flame extinguished, their muscles sagged and their coloration paled. He studied Van Eyck's eyes, hoping that, as some had propounded, they held a lasting image of his killer. Sadly, no one knew that Oliver noted Van Eyck's. No one had. Oliver then noted that Van Eyck's rough hands, not usual, as the man worked to support himself. He saw no evidence of bruising upon them, and they looked clean. Nothing suggested that Van Eyck had fought with his attacker. Just below the ribcage, Van Eyck had been stabbed with a smooth, symmetrical piece of wood. Oblong in shape, it came to a rounded tip on the visible end. Laurent did not withdraw the weapon. That duty would fall to the barber surgeon. He saw nothing else unusual about the body. No rips, no tears, no violence of any sort. The wound was the only abnormality that Oliver Laurent could detect. He conceded, however, that it was a significant one. Oliver sat back on his haunches and considered what else he might do. He patted the pockets of Van Eyck's doublet. They lay smooth and unruffled. He did not believe they had been searched for valuables. The barber surgeon may find something more after he arrives. Laurent stood and took out his legs. While Oliver waited, he looked about the building that served as a home and a workshop. Van Eyck lived in the back 2 rooms, while his shop faced the street. A large room and a large loom dominated the first room. On it, a half-woven piece of cloth lay stretched, the threads strung tightly to a weaver's beam. A second, smaller loom stood off to the side near a window. A pair of lanterns hung on either side. Oliver touched them, and neither felt warm. In the corner of the room sat a table. A tall stack of folded cloth lay undisturbed. On the other end sat an apple, partially eaten, with two mugs of wine. The food appeared to have been there for several hours. The wine felt room temperature, and the meat of the apple had begun to turn brown and speckled with black. Oliver Laurent stepped outside. A crowd pressed close to the shop door. As word spread of the murder, more of Van Eyck's community had come. Nearly entire population of Norwich strangers gathered on the street. Incomprehensible Flemish words swirled around him. The tone confirmed what Laurent saw. The strangers were anxious. They feared an attack by the English. They didn't trust the English constable to give them justice. Oliver's angry stomach flared. Had not England opened its doors to them, they should show gratitude, not distrust. He harumphed at the lot of them, and he turned aside. On the porch, the blacksmith's son held a firm grip on the shirt collar of a young boy. The witness twisted and turned, attempting to free himself without success. The blacksmith's eldest son, Tom, served as Oliver's deputy. Although they shared the same number of years, they could hardly have looked more different. Tom's forearms and hands were those of a man trained to pound iron. His face carried the complexion of someone who stood before a hearth. Oliver, in his body, had the coloring of a man who lifted a book. For the moment, Oliver ignored the lad. Instead, his eyes roamed the crowd. They were all clad in brown and wool cloaks, the everyday dress of the Englishmen and the strangers. Does anyone here know anything of what happened? He saw head shakes, and he heard denials in accented English. A voice from the crowd spoke. Van Eyck owes me money. How am I to be paid? Oliver looked to see a cloaked man in a floppy black hat shaking his fist. The man's accent told Laurent that he was Norwich-born. Do you know what happened here? Oliver repeated, looking at the man. The man looked down at his muddy shoes, and he said nothing. Then each of you to his house or business. Allow me to work. Laurent grabbed firmly onto the boy. I have this one, he said to the blacksmith's son, speaking loudly enough for all to hear. Take anyone who does not disperse into custody. Do not worry about being too rough. And his deputy's eyes gleamed as he surveyed the crowd. As most of the crowd reluctantly retreated, a portly man worked his way up to the front. Before the deputy could pounce, Oliver laid his free hand upon his taut forearm. That would be the barber surgeon. In the Low Countries, as in ours, they accompany soldiers to battle. I summoned him to look around at the wound. Oliver heard the slow exhale of breath, and he felt the deputy's arms relax. Still gripping his witness, he studied the approaching man. His full beard offset his bald head. The man wore a leather apron and carried a satchel of tools. His eyes looked solemn. As the surgeon barber drew close, Oliver began. Inside I have a dead... I know who you have, and I know what you have, the barber surgeon interrupted. The entire community knows that André Van Eyck is dead. He shook his head slowly. Trouble follows us from Flanders. You have seen a great many wounds, have you not? Ja, the barber surgeon nodded. Look to this man. Tell me what you see. The barber surgeon nodded again. Oliver Laurent dragged the witness away from the door. He did not want the boy watching the barber surgeon's labors. He turned the lad away from the street, and he dropped to one knee, never releasing his grip. I'm told that you found the body. The boy nodded. How did you happen to come here? I came to deliver a message. Laurent's ears caught the local accent. You're not a stranger? No, the boy nearly spat the word. We live on the right side of the River Wensum. He straightened up, and tall as he could. My family runs the Grey Mare Inn. Laurent nodded. That's the new place? The boy pushed back his shoulders. We've been there for 2 years. And what brings you here to Van Wyck's shop? Well, a guest at the inn paid me to deliver a message. What was the message? The boy closed his eyes and he recited. Tell the weaver that I'll come tonight to pick up my cloth. The boy opened his eyes. I went inside to say that. Did you see anyone? Just this man. With his last breath, he said, copper. Then I heard his death rattle. Did you help him? Laurent asked. The boy shook his head. Didn't want to touch him. Laurent nodded. Because he was dead? The boy's eyes narrowed. No, sir. Because my parents want me to have nothing to do with them. My mother says them Flemish carry diseases. But you came here today. The boy crossed his arms over his chest. Because he paid me. What is the name of the man who hands out coins? The cloth merchant, Master Stickney. The boy's other answers proved unhelpful. When Oliver released him, the boy disappeared like smoke. Oliver Laurent re-entered the shop. The barber surgeon looked up briefly before returning to the examination. He had moved Van Eyck's body to the work table, and he had removed the dead man's shirt. The barber surgeon shook his head. Nasty business, this. Perhaps not entirely surprising. He turned and wiped his hands across his apron. Ja, quick work for me. The man was stabbed one time with a shuttle. He held up a bloody instrument. The barber surgeon apparently read the quizzical expression on Oliver's face. He made a wave-like motion with his hand, used for weaving, like the needle for a seamstress. His hand ran the length of the long vertical threads on the loom. These are the wrap threads, and these are the warp threads. Then he mentioned and motioned along the horizontal. These are the weft. The shuttle takes the weft over and under the warp. He illustrated with a wave-like motion. Laurent nodded. He nodded again. A barber surgeon who knows weaving? A man nodded. We are Flemish. English sheep make the best wool. The weavers of Flanders make the best cloth. That is why Queen Elizabeth let us come when Protestants were no longer welcome at home. We are useful. And she offered refuge to those persecuted for our shared faith. The surgeon nodded, although his face remained expressionless. Ja. Laurent knew about the plight of these non-natives, the Norwich strangers. Laurent and his friends regularly discussed the matters of the world over beers back in Oxford. 2 days, he thought. Oliver Laurent shook his head to clear it. He gestured toward the body. Any other marks? The surgeon barber shook his head. No. He poked the shuttle against the palm of his hand. Not too sharp. Would take strength to stab. You don't seem surprised by the killing. What do you know? The barber surgeon just shrugged. Just what I hear. Laurent waited, saying nothing. Van Eyck began paying the wool gatherers, carders, and spinners less. The community has much difficulty living in this new land with strange customs and language. They need their money. Perhaps he had no choice. The barber surgeon swatted away that suggestion. The weaver makes the money with the art. Again, Laurent's eyes apparently signaled confusion. The barber surgeon pointed to the loom in the bright corner of the room. He makes the tapestries. He makes the cloth for clothes and the tapestries for the walls. The English pay him gold. He didn't need to steal pennies from his own. The barber surgeon set his jaw in disgust. Oliver could see the man holding something back. Tell me what you've heard. The man pressed his lips together. After a moment, he spoke. Some say the English weavers were jealous of his skill. No Englishman would kill. They fear the foreigner who threatens their livelihood, the barber surgeon interrupted. I have seen men kill for many reasons. Bread for your children is better than most. He clenched his jaw and he fell silent. When it became clear that the man would offer nothing further, Oliver paid him. The barber surgeon stood at the door and paused. Shall I send a local girl to clean and to prepare the body? Oliver Laurent had not considered that as a constable he might also serve as the next of kin. He nodded in agreement, and alone in the room, he leaned against the wall. The additional responsibility weighed on him. Oliver felt Oxford slipping away, further away. He crossed his arms to his middle. His bilious stomach raged. A shuttle seemed an odd weapon. Oliver had seen combs, a knife, and other implements around the shop. Several tools looked to be better weapons. Oliver paused. Perhaps a shuttle fight was a tradition within this culture of weavers. Oliver knew so little about these people. Most had moved to Norwich because they had departed for Oxford. In Oliver Lawrence's 3-year absence, much of Norwich had changed. He had intended to remain away longer. Reading law at Gray's Inn in London was to follow his study of classics in Oxford. Lord Lawrence, however, had summoned him home. Norwich's previous constable's term had expired, and the Lord demanded his younger brother to take on the job. The discussion had been heated. Lord Lawrence had only wanted to agree to maintain his allowance and to pay for his studies if Oliver accepted the unpaid position of the parish constable. "Keep the peace, Oliver," Lord Lawrence had said. "Make sure the workers get to work and the drifters get somewhere else." "The term of a constable is 1 year," Oliver said. He remembered gesturing emphatically with his index finger to illustrate that point. "I will remain at the post for exactum undum annum, 1 year, and no more." Now a break from the story. This is the Talking Information Center's Tales of Mystery program, being read from here at the Talking Information Center. And this is the short story from the Tales of Mystery program entitled "The Tangled Web They Weave" by the author Mark Thielman. And now back to the story. And so, a parish constable had become, he had. As a prospective lawyer, he had been proud of the lofty Latin language. But as a prospective lawyer, he should have gotten the agreement in writing. Oliver opened the door. The blacksmith's son remained outside. The disgruntled crowd kept their distance. "Go to the Grey Mare Inn. Find Master Stickney, the cloth merchant. Tell him that I will be by to see him later today." The deputy departed. Laurent saw a painted dragon sign hanging above a nearby business. He hoped the apothecary could prepare a stomach powder for him. Laurent sloshed across the street, the air thick and smelling of wet thatch and mud. The proprietor looked up as he entered. Then he took a step in Oliver's direction and squinted. "Constable Laurent, welcome to my establishment." The apothecary's paunch testified to his success at his craft. Laurent explained his ailment. "I recommend wormwood and mint," the man said, and he worked his way down the row of jars, leaning close. After a brief study, he opened 2 jars, gathering the ingredients. Wielding his knife with a practiced ease, he chopped the herbs into small pieces. He pushed these into his mortar, and he began grinding them together. "Fear not," he said in response to Oliver's unasked question. "Up close, I see quite well. The ingredients I mix are exactly the ones you need. No harm will come." He leaned over and sniffed the powder and sniffed the compound before adding a few more leaves of dried mint. "It's one of the things that Van Eyck and I had in common. Years of close work had robbed us both of our distant sight. He at his looms, me at my jars." The apothecary poured the finished compound into a small piece of cloth, and he tied it with a ribbon. "Blend this with warm wine and drink it down." "Did you know Van Eyck well?" Oliver asked as he paid for his remedy. "As well as any," the man said, as he wiped out his mortar and returned it to the shelf. "We talked about symbols. Apothecaries have symbols for everything. In his tapestries, Van Eyck wove them. We spoke of such things. He was an artist." "And did he have enemies?" "Everyone has enemies," the apothecary said. "Although I liked him," he quickly added. "Van Eyck had a keen sense of humor. Were his enemies north or south of the River Wensum? English on their side, Flemish on ours. I think it is best." Laurent interlaced his fingers into a bridge. "But we are one town." The apothecary smiled at the sentiment. "You have not lived here long. I grew up in this town, and I have been away at Oxford. School will do you good, the apothecary said. Laurent heard the gentle reproach. It was said that Van Eyck had begun paying the wool workers less. The apothecary shrugged. If true, I am sure he had his reasons. The two men stood silently. Have you seen his tapestry? The apothecary asked. His latest piece, full of symbols? Laurent's eyes widened. It's not there. Again the apothecary shrugged. Perhaps the buyer claimed it. Did you see anyone? The apothecary scratched his chin. His eyes drifted towards the ceiling. He had a wealthy man visit this morning, red cloak. Another man visited later, plain cloaked. And would you know either man? Laurent asked, again felt hope that the case might be quickly resolved. The apothecary raised his hands towards his eyes. I am sorry, but I did not see either man very well. The red-cloaked man, perhaps, bought the tapestry. Laurent frowned. He'd hoped for more. The apothecary pointed his finger, and bits of ground wormwood clung to it. The other man had a black cap. Outside the crowd, outside the rain had returned. The falling water and the stout deputy had dispersed the crowd. Laurent squelched through the mud, back to the weaver's shop unhindered. He hoped to see the black-hatted man. Instead, he saw only the washer-girl, huddled beneath her woven basket, finding as much shelter as she could. Laurent ushered her inside. Softly singing a Flemish melody, she began working. He considered what he knew. Perhaps, he thought, the boy had misheard. In Van Eyck's accented English, he may have said cupboard rather than copper. Oliver searched the cabinetry in Van Eyck's living chamber. He found a change of clothing and a Bible in Flemish. Cloth and thread filled the shelves of the other cabinet. Hidden behind the plates in the small corner when Van Eyck took his meals, Laurent found a leather bag containing money. He counted the few coins and returned the bag to its hiding place. Hearing no singing, he stepped into the workshop. The deputy stood there, leering at the washer girl, mouth agape, his breathing making small whistling noises. Laurent's eyes narrowed. What? I've been to the Grey Mare. Master Sickney says you must hurry if you wish to see him. He is soon to Lord Laurent's home. Oliver was not surprised that the cloth merchant might visit his elder brother. Lord Laurent did business with anyone who might enrich him. Then I'd best be off. While I'm gone, see if you can find that black-hatted man who spoke up earlier. I wish to speak with him. The blacksmith's son smiled. And no violence, Oliver added. The smile disappeared. As Oliver Laurent walked, he felt eyes, sheltered from the rain, following him. Crossing the River Wensum on the stone bridge, he immediately had left for Oxford. But the strangers needed space, and the area had quickly grown. Most of the buildings on the south side of the river were familiar and long established. Only a few, like the Grey Mare, had been built since his departure. Master Stickney met him at the door and quickly led him upstairs. I let the room over the kitchen. It is the warmest room in the inn. Stickney beckoned Oliver inside. A slight man older than Laurent, Stickney's patrician nose highlighted his gaunt cheeks and his thin lips. A black mole marked his cheek. You're soaked through. Stickney pulled a stool close to the fire. He had, Laurent noted, the easy charm of a man who sells for his livelihood. Oliver Laurent shook off the loose water. The fire made hissing noises from the droplets. He pinched his nose at the smell of burnt hair. Stickney noticed the pained expression. They will be roasting pork for tonight. I will miss it. As I told your man, I'm off to Lord Laurent's this evening. Pity, I do love a good suckling pig. Oliver hung his scarf to dry, safely removed from the flames. Dark beads of curled fiber attested to earlier efforts at managing the proper distance. In the corner hung Stickney's red and fur-trimmed cloak. On the small table lay an ivory-colored ruffled collar and dress dagger. Stickney handed him a cup of warmed wine. He wore an expensive doublet and jerkin. Stickney gestured to the table. "The clothes of London. There, fashion makes the man. Here," he shrugged, "one must play the part. I must look proper for Lord Laurent, don't you agree?" Oliver returned a faint nod. "You're here about Van Eyck?" Oliver drank and nodded, content to be let the man volunteer information. "One of my best weavers. I bought my inventory before the spring fairs." "And you saw Van Eyck?" Stickney nodded. "Yes, this morning, but not about cloth. We had a contract, and he was to deliver tomorrow. Today I purchased a tapestry that he had been weaving for me." "The loom in the corner," Oliver said to himself. "Yes, the man was an artist. Would you care to see it?" Oliver readily agreed. Stickney unlocked a chest at the foot of his bed. He pulled out a rolled cloth. Stepping to the bed, Stickney carefully unwound it, screening Laurent from view. Then he stepped back and he gestured with his arm. "Behold." Oliver found himself holding his breath. He did not wish to exhale, for fear of despoiling the work of art. The threads looked like brush strokes. The central figure, the unicorn, a symbol of the resurrection, rested beneath a broad oak tree. Oliver admired the fine detail. The unicorn epitomized perfection. The delicate animal appeared worthy of Plato or the risen Lord. The oak tree, by contrast, lacked symmetry. The branches on both sides seemed to be growing independently. Oliver could easily imagine finding such a tree in the forest. He found its realism expressed through the thread to be quite stunning. Van Eyck had skills and knowledge of symbols. Oliver yearned to be back at Oxford discussing this work with his friends. 2 days. "Magnificent, isn't it?" Stickney said. Oliver nodded. His finger circled the tree. "He has woven in Aesop's fables." Stickney nodded and began pointing. "There is the frog and the ox. There the gnat and the bull. And there," Oliver said, "is the ass, the fox, and the lion. And over there, the wolf and the sheep." He leaned in, studying these and the other animal figures displayed. He puzzled over the choices the weaver had made. Again, he felt the tug to return to the university. He swallowed his longing, and he straightened his back. He frowned. "A problem?" Stickney asked. "The apothecary told me that Van Eyck's eyes were beginning to fail. You notice the fox. His snout is drawn very narrowly from his head and his body. The fox has but one whisker. The donkey also appears to be small, too small, and too skinny. A fully sighted weaver would have noticed." Stickney looked closely, and then he nodded. "I fear you are correct. Unfortunately, I have already paid the full price. I must continue to do business in this town. I cannot afford the reputation of a man who demands payment from the dead, and who might have wanted Van Eyck dead?" Laurent asked him. Stickney shrugged. "I've traveled up from my home in London. I've come to Norwich to buy cloth. I know none of your local gossip." Now a break from the story. This is the Talking Information Center's short story program being read from here at the Talking Information Center. And this is the short story written for the Tales of Mystery program, This story for the Tales of Mystery program written by the author Mark Thielman and entitled The Tangled Web They Weave. And now, back to the Tales of Mystery program for the Talking Information Center. The words, "You're local," lingered in Laurent's ears. A question poked him. Was he a local or a stranger in this town? They talked longer, but Oliver learned nothing about the murder. Wrapping himself in his slightly drier garments, he returned to Van Eyck's shop. When he entered, Laurent found the washer girl had finished her work. Van Eyck's body had been cleared and dressed in his best clothes. His old clothes lay folded at his feet. Oliver paid her extra to apologize for his deputy. She tightly clutched the money. "May I take that, sir?" She pointed to the shirt that Van Eyck had died wearing. "Whatever for?" "The blood will wash most of it anyway. A clean cut, the tear in the fabric, will mend easily." She held up the shirt, and she showed the rend, inside and out. "It's not bad. The shirt would help, sir. Van Eyck cut his payment for carding wool, leaving us forced to take any work we can." She turned and faced the dead man, acting all English and cheating his own. Laurent snatched the shirt from her hand. "I need this garment. If no heirs come to claim, I will consider what is to be done." Her mouth formed a pout before she tossed her head and left. Oliver laid the shirt on the table and followed her out the door. He walked down the street until he came to the sign with the painted leopard. He entered the goldsmith's shop. From the back, a sweaty man with thick forearms emerged. He looked, Oliver thought, like a man who cast molten metal. "Are you the goldsmith?" "Ja," the man answered. Laurent gestured with his head. "You've heard of what happened to Van Eyck?" "Ja," the man answered, offering nothing. His last words were of copper. "What do you know of it?" The man waved his hands excitedly. "I am an honest businessman. Have I said you mix cheaper chemicals and metals with your gold?" The man's thick hands waved wildly. He sputtered Dutch phrases that Oliver could only guess at. A child emerged from the back. She had the delicate fingers Laurent would expect for jewelry work. "What is he saying?" Oliver Laurent demanded. The child chewed on her lip for a moment before answering. "He has done nothing you say. He sells only honest gold." "Ja," the man said, nodding enthusiastically. "Good merchant." Dutch words followed him out the door. Ahead he saw his deputy. In one hand, Laurent's assistant held a black hat. In the other hand, the man who had worn it. Oliver opened the door to the weaver's shop, and the deputy tossed the man into the available chair. "I know nothing," the man said. "I didn't stab him with the shuttle. I don't mix gold with copper." Oliver saw that he had a bruise around his right eye. He shifted his gaze to the blacksmith's son, who smiled. "You seem to know a lot," Oliver said quietly. The man's eyes danced wildly. "Rumors only. You were the last man to see him alive." "We did not meet. I was coming this morning. You saw me. You're English. What brought you to this side of the river?" Oliver stepped closer to the young man. "Van Eyck promised me money. My family is desperate. He said he would try to help." "And where were you yesterday?" "In the fields. With less money paid for wool, the sheep must produce more. I prayed with my sheep." A small smile cracked Oliver's face. "He may yet leave for Oxford on time. Alone, no witness except for the sheep. Witnesses put you here." He gestured with his head towards the deputy, who promptly snatched up with the young man. "I will get a poultice for your eye. If you are to be hanged, I would like you to be fully healed." The man paled. "Why would I kill Van Eyck? What would I sell? Who would I sell to?" Oliver ignored his whimpering and crossed back to the apothecary. The bearded man again looked when he entered. More stomach pains? Laurent shook his head. Medicine for an injured eye. Blind? Bruised. The apothecary leaned in and squinted. Then he shrugged, picked up his knife, and began chopping and mixing ingredients. You spoke truthfully earlier, Laurent said. I have seen Van Eyck's latest tapestry. It is a masterpiece. The unicorn seems poised to leap off the cloth. The apothecary nodded. He was a master, and skilled with symbols. Laurent nodded. The unicorn, I understood. The beast represents the resurrection. The oak's tree, I ponder. The apothecary smiled as he pushed the salve towards Oliver. You must spend more time on the Flemish side of the River Winsum, Constable. Van Eyck translates to the oak. Laurent felt his face flush. As the parish constable, he should have known this rudimentary fact about the citizenry, and the fable displays surrounding the tree created a moralistic tableau. The apothecary nodded his face now grim. As an old man, I think about the resurrection more often these days. How did he know where to put the colored threads? The apothecary smiled. He explained it to me once. Van Eyck used to drawing. He called it a cartoon. The man provided him the map, but his hand supplied the artistry. The man blew out a long breath and stared off into space. I should like to see the tapestry one last time, a tribute to my friend. I will help if I can, Oliver said. Oliver returned to Van Eyck's shop. He returned and handed over the bomb, and he ordered the deputy to deliver the prisoner to the jail. Safely, Laurent reminded. The blacksmith's son seemed to measure the poultice to determine if there was enough to treat two bruises. After the deputy and the prisoner left, Laurent searched for the cartoon, finally locating it under a folded cloth near the window. He studied it before tucking the document beneath his cloak and departing. At his quarters, Oliver changed his clothes. Even with the brother, the must dressed appropriately to call upon Lord Laurent. While there, he ran his fingers along the bookshelf. He admired the Oxford collection, but after a moment of learning and yearning, he plucked Aesop's Fables, the book that he had loved since his childhood. His mind churned during the walk to Lord Laurent's manor. The home had been built in the shape of an E. The design signified a loyalty oath to the Virgin Queen. He thought again of the Flemish. If a powerful man like Lord Laurent must occasionally demonstrate fealty, how much time must these immigrant strangers spend bowing to authority? Oliver knew that he could stay under his brother's roof, but he liked the illusion of independence gained from the small room that he rented. Tonight Oliver needed to remind his brother that his term as constable expired, and that his allowance to attend Oxford must be restored according to their agreement. His report that the murder had been solved should surely soothe these demands. Still he felt unsettled. The familial servants welcomed him. They ushered him to the great hall, where the lord entertained his guest, Stickney, he saw had dressed in the great ruffled collar and his other finery. His brother rose from his chair the moment he walked into the room. This is our constable, who solved that low country murder quick as a wink. You've kept the peace. Now the locals no longer need to fear strangers, or the other way around. Better for business. I shall miss having you as constable. Oliver breathed a sigh of relief, for that had gone better than he could have hoped. And I shall collect my cloth and depart in the morning, Stickney said, knowing full well that the local roads are safe. You have met Master Stickney, brother? Lord Laurent asked. He brings money to Norwich. That makes him our friend. I bring more than just money, my lord, Stickney said as he reached into his pocket. A small token. In London, Queen Elizabeth has such a taste for sugar that it has blackened her teeth. Black teeth have become fashionable. I have brought you this cosmetic jar as a sign of my esteem. All of the leading citizens use it. You cannot be well dressed in London without a dab of a tooth black. Lord Laurent accepted the gift and smiled. Oliver knew that money, status, and influence were his brother's holy trinity. Oliver made a slight cough. "Something, brother?" Lord Laurent asked. Oliver bowed. "Yes, my lord. Van Eyck's skill as tapestry maker was renowned among the strangers. I would like to request a public display of his last work for one day before Master Stickney leaves. It would give the strangers a chance to grieve. I believe that it would keep the peace." Stickney looked to Lord Laurent. "Sir, the fairs are upon." Lord Laurent held up a finger, silencing him. "The constable asked for one day. That sounds reasonable. I request you to stay." Stickney nodded. He and Oliver heard an order wrapped in the gilding of a request. Oliver smiled. He knew who to call to preserve the peace would carry the day. Lord Laurent nodded in agreement with himself. "Sunrise to sunset tomorrow. The tapestry shall hang in the church for all to see. I am interested in this work myself." In his eyes roamed the great hall. His eyes roamed all of his great hall. In a pity, no one mentioned this foreign craftsman's skills before today, he said. And now a break from the story. This is the Talking Information Center's Tales of Mystery program. And this tale of mystery was written by the author, Mark Thielman, and is entitled The Tangled Web They Weave. And now, back to the Talking Information Center's Tales of Mystery program. A crowd gathered outside the church doors at sunrise the following day. They awaited the hanging of the tapestry. While most spoke Dutch, a few Englishmen also congregated. They stood apart from the strangers, not wanting to be confused, but still curious to see the artwork. Stickney sat upon a tumbrel loaded with cloth. He watched the sun inch up the sky, prepared to depart the moment that he had fulfilled his obligation. No one moved. Everyone awaited Lord Laurent's arrival. The great man rode to the front of the church. A groom held his mount as he dismounted. Lord Laurent entered, followed by his younger brother and the throng. Oliver wore a small leather pouch at his side. Lord Laurent strode up to the nave. At the crossing, he paused, studying the tapestry. His eyes circled the cloth. When he had finished, he stepped back. "A pity. I paid others to decorate my walls when we could have kept the money here in Norwich," he said. "Quite appropriate for a church, brother," Oliver said. Lord Laurent nodded. The resurrection surrounded by moral lessons of Aesop. "Some good ones," he said, and he pointed to the ass, the lion, and the fox. "Admonitions against treachery," he said. "They all are," Oliver agreed. "A pity," Lord Laurent repeated. "Deputy," Oliver called. And here the blacksmith's son entered, dragging the arrested man. Oliver was pleased that the man's eyes appeared no worse. "What do you see?" he demanded. The arrested man's lip shook with fear. "It's Van Eyck's tapestry," he said. "And what does it mean?" Oliver asked. The man's eyes darted about the cloth. "Beasts," he said, and that perhaps with the last bit of courage that he had remaining, he smiled. "One sheep. That wool gatherer wouldn't make any money from Van Eyck either," he said. "Look closely," Oliver said. "That's a wolf in sheep's clothing." "Are you having the trial here on sacred ground?" Stickney asked, and his eyes went right to Lord Laurent. "In a manner of speaking," Oliver said, and he turned his back, and he walked into a small brazier. "What is the meaning?" Stickney asked. Oliver silenced him with one hand. Van Eyck was not murdered, by one who seized the shuttle in rage, but rather he was killed with malice aforethought. The killer stabbed him with a dagger, Oliver said. Don't be foolish, brother. All of Norwich knows that he was stabbed with a shuttle. You yourself were present. You were present when it was removed, I've been told, said Lord Laurent to his brother Oliver. The washer girl showed me the inside of his shirt, Oliver said. It had been pierced with little tearing. A knife entered Van Eyck first. The shuttle came later to disguise the true weapon, Oliver said. Then who did the deed? Lord Laurent demanded of his brother Oliver the Constable. Master Stickney visited Van Eyck early in the day, and he obtained his tapestry, clearly visible to all. He returned later, disguised in a brown cape and a floppy black hat, and he stabbed Van Eyck with his dagger, likely the one I saw in this room, Oliver said. Absurd, Stickney answered. Back in his room, Stickney destroyed the black hat. I smelt the burnt wool when I entered his room. And with that, Oliver stopped and dropped a bit of wool cloth into the brazier. A tendril of smoke emerged. Here in sheep country, the smell of burnt wool is so commonplace, we hardly notice, Oliver said. Then Oliver watched the crowd flare their nostrils and nod. They recognized the burnt hair smell, too. It rained, and I had my damp clothes too close to the fire. I stand accused for this, Stickney defended himself. Lord Laurent looked to Oliver, and he arched an eyebrow. You knew of Van Eyck's failing eyes. That was how you could get close to him with the knife, Oliver said to Stickney. You said yourself that the case involved cheating on gold, Stickney said. Oliver nodded. It did involve cheating, and he pointed to the wall hanging. Look at the tapestry. Van Eyck was losing sight, but his eyes worked perfectly up close. The cartoon for this tapestry shows correctly drawn animals. In the tapestry, study the red fox, the sly trickster who cheats his friends, woven with a narrow nose. Each of the fables pictured displays cheating and treachery. The treachery of a narrow-faced man with a single black mark on his cheek. Oliver turned and faced Stickney. You cheated him and forced him to deprive the wool gatherers. I've seen his money bag. A stranger knew he could not go to the courts against an Englishman. His only revenge was to mock you in the tapestry. You struck him down when you considered that you had been made the fool, Oliver said. Stickney then pointed to the tapestry. It is the resurrection. Everyone sees that. The unicorn sits beneath the oak tree. Van Eyck is Dutch for oak. He portrayed himself as an innocent alongside the risen Lord. A murmur went through the crowd. All could see the symbolism once it had been revealed. All saw it. Stickney smiled now. Everyone knows the man's last word was copper. I paid a fair price in silver. If you've seen his money bag, you know. You are right, Master Stickney. The answer is with Van Eyck's last word. It was not copper, as the English boy thought. The goldsmith told me that he was an honest merchant. Koper means buyer or merchant in Dutch. Van Eyck identified his killer with his last word, Oliver said. The Flemish attendees here grumbled louder. You are a stranger here too, Stickney, and you do not know their ways, Oliver said. And as Oliver spoke, he turned his back to Stickney, and his hands went first to his pouch and then to his mouth. When he turned, he bit into an apple. He showed the meat first to Lord Laurent and then to Stickney. Tooth black, Cooper Stickney, the last man to see Van Eyck, wore tooth black. I understand that is the fashion in London, Oliver said. And after a pause, he raised his other hand. And here is the apple from Van Eyck's, still dotted with his bits of black, Oliver said. Stickney's eyes darted about the church naves. With any thoughts of flight, however, were dashed when the iron grip of the blacksmith's son seized his collar and threw him to the floor. After Stickney had been jailed, Oliver walked alongside Lord Laurent's horse back to the family home. Well done, brother. Well done, brother, Lord Laurent said to his younger brother. You have kept the peace. Well done, and you have kept the peace, he repeated. And I see, my brother, Oliver said to his brother, Lord Laurent. You have kept the tapestry, Oliver said. No better place to promote the work of the Norwich strangers than in the great hall, Lord Laurent said. No better place. You keep it for their good, Oliver said. For their good? Naturally, naturally, Lord Laurent repeated. Naturally I do, and I will. They traveled further without speaking, Lord Laurent and his brother Oliver, the constable. Why did he send the boy? Lord Laurent asked Oliver. Least suspicious way to discover the body, Oliver said. And he couldn't take Van Eyck's cloth until my inquiry was concluded, Oliver said. Lord Laurent then grunted. Loss of a good customer. And who shall you appoint as the next constable? Oliver asked his brother, now that he would no longer be constable. Who shall you appoint, brother? The blacksmith's boy seemed to be your able assistant, Lord Laurent said to him. If you like brutes, brother, if you like brutes, Oliver said. Lord Laurent shook his head. I do not. They do not. Keep the peace, Oliver finished his brother's sentence. He said nothing more, and his thoughts preoccupied with escaping to Oxford before he found himself appointed constable for another year. That was the short story, The Tangled Web They Weave, and that Tales of Mystery, written by the author Mark Thielman, read from here at the Talking Information Center, read for the Talking Information Center's Tales of Mystery program. And this is reading from the short story, The Other Side of the Window, by the author Adrian McKinty for the Tales of Mystery program. Lars Thorwald had always been company. He had to be. He was a salesman. But all that changed when he lost his job at the Hartford Accident Insurance Company he had been let go in the latest reorganization, and his position was given to the young man that he had been training for the previous 6 months. His boss, Mr. Stevens, was a poet, alert to the tragedy of life, and he knew that Thorwald was a married man, but still, he said there was nothing that he could do about it. The brass, as he called them, wanted hungry young men who could get new accounts, and Thorwald was only 40, but with his shock of white hair and his sagging body, he looked 15 years older than that. Lars Thorwald and Anna Thorwald had moved to the city so that Lars could look for work, but everything then began to spiral. Lars began drinking, and he lost his patter, but he didn't laugh much anymore. After a series of degrading gigs, Lars had found work as a costume jewelry salesman, trekking up and down the Jersey Shore, Long Island, and the northern suburbs of New York, going door to door with his case full of cheap trinkets and his imitation of pearls. That was the reading from the short story, The Other Side of the Window, and that Tales of Mystery, written by the author Adrian McKinty, read from here at the Talking Information Center, and that Tales of Mystery was read from the Talking Information Center, and this is the other story from the Tales of Mystery that was read earlier, entitled The Tangled Web They Weave, and that was written by the author Mark Thielman. Thanks a lot for listening to the Talking Information Center's Tales of Mystery program. Thanks again for listening, and please do listen again. Take care, and goodbye, everybody.